to Late of the Rings, a podcast dedicated to Lord of the Rings the card game. My name's John, and here's my co-host. His salted pork is particularly good. It's Emery.
Salted pork.
I knew I wasn't going to get through that one.
You know what? When I saw that, am I right in saying that that was only in the extended version of the film? Or was it? I think it might have been.
Yeah, because... Yeah,
but either way,
yeah, I think it is because it's the Flotsam and Jetsam scene, isn't it? Where they're in Isengard and they found all the pipeweed and the salted pork. It's Merry and Pippin, isn't it?
Yeah, but I never wanted salted pork so much. I never really thought about salted pork. I mean, I like cured meats and stuff, you know. But it just sounded good, and also. Even though it was floating in this kind of murky water outside Isengard, there was a really delicious-looking roast chicken. Which had already been roasted. I don't know what Saruman was doing. He's like prepared it in advance. He's roasted it, maybe salted the chicken too, to preserve it. But that looked delicious also.
Yeah, what was he doing with that roast chicken?
He didn't really strike me as a roast chicken kind of guy. Saruman, but fair play to him.
Perhaps it was Grimus.
Yeah. No, he eats rough. Also, there's like a little bit of hypocrisy in that scene, because earlier on, Saruman had told Gandalf that his love of the halfling leaf had dulled his senses or something like that. Yep. And yet there he is with two pots of the finest...
Very true.
The finest leaf in the East Farthing or whatever it was. So he's a smoker on the sly, isn't he? He's one of those guys. He has a go at people for smoking. And when I was looking, he, you know, goes off to the pantry for a quick puff.
Exactly. He's in the back room there. You think he's looking up spells, but actually he's eating chicken and smoking weed.
Yeah. Yeah. Be out in a minute.
Oh.
Yeah. What are you doing, sir?
I'm nothing. Sorry. So I hear your salted pork is particularly good.
It is, but only for the select few that get to taste it.
Okay, so other than curing meats, have you been up to anything interesting?
So since last we spoke, we've got it's really weird. So okay, let's very quickly do the corona thing. We were never really officially out of any kind of lockdown. We've been in lockdown since, what, March?
Yeah.
But then about a couple of weeks ago, we were in full lockdown again. They're calling it lockdown 2. In fact, they're calling it lockdown 2.0.
Oh, yeah, 2.0. You got to do this in increments.
But there was no 1.4. It's just really weird. So, like, people are acting like they're in lockdown again, which is kind of good, but... We were never kind of not in lockdown. I don't know. It's all very strange. Anyway, so what that's meant is, so it's gone back to being a very kind of quiet time.
Yeah.
Not many people about and people just sticking at home. You're only meant to go out for essential shopping, for food and stuff and a bit of exercise and that's it. So yeah, not been up to an awful lot. So it's like the early episodes.
I was going
to
say, this is just a long-winded way of saying you haven't done anything.
Correct.
Well, you know, touch wood, this global pandemic will come to an end at some point, but then we're really going to have to think of another reason why you haven't done anything.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, so I've got a perfect excuse at the moment. Yeah. No, I've been... what have I been doing? I've been continuing to sort of play music again and listening to a lot of music, and have I watched... anything of interest in the last couple of weeks? I don't think since last week. I think a couple of movies. No, that's been about it. It's been very kind of a bit drab. I'll be honest with you. And the weather's turned here. So, you know, it's even sort of going out for exercise and things like that is a bit trickier anyway. So,
Yeah, winter is definitely coming.
Yeah. Oh, that's a nice turn of phrase.
Yeah, I think that's from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, most definitely. And how about your good self?
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I take the mickey, but actually, it's a very similar story. Yeah, I've been locked up in my house. And yeah, I mean, one thing it does allow me to do is use it as a very good excuse to eat some good food and drink some nice wine and basically spoil myself because I can't go anywhere.
That sounds like Christmas. In fact, you live in the opposite of Narnia, where it's always Christmas but never winter. That sounds pretty good.
That's all right, yeah. Very nice. Other than that, have I been watching anything? I'll tell you what I have watched. I've rewatched the first series of His Dark Materials in preparation for the second series to start. And I mean, I didn't really need to rewatch it. I mean, I had it all in my head, but I felt like I really enjoyed it actually at the time. So I thought, oh, it's only 8 episodes. I think I'm just going to sort of binge it because I watched it week on week out when it was first on. And I must admit, I thoroughly enjoyed it, even I think more than the first time I watched it. It was, I think I'm not much of a binge watcher. I like things to come out episodically. You know, I like to have time to think on things, but because I'd already seen it, I watched it sort of one episode per night over the space of just over a week. And I think it flowed very well as sort of one long story, which of course it is. And I think I watched it with a far less critical eye. When I first watched it, it was like, okay, you know, I really love the book. And they made that really quite abysmal film. So when the series came out, I was sort of half very excited and half very worried that it was just going to be another mistake. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. So now I'm torn because now I don't know whether or not to catch up with the new series because I think there's already been 2 episodes of that, or maybe wait for it to finish and then do the same sort of thing. Just watch it over the course of a week.
Yeah, and I've been watching it. So I, like you, probably read the books maybe around the same kind of age, maybe late teens or something like that, or 20-odd, something like that, I guess.
Yeah, but, yeah, 20s, I think, yeah.
But yeah, I really enjoyed the book. Like I said, there aren't that many kind of fantasy things I'm sort of mega into, but the ones I do get into tend to really draw me in, and that was definitely one of them. Without giving any spoilers whatsoever, I'll be very intrigued to see how they tackle some of the things that are coming up later in the book.
Yeah.
And in the last book as well, because things get quite...
abstract.
Well, abstract is the word, yeah. Got oblique. And I won't say any more than that, but yeah, that'll be a real challenge for anybody making it, because I think, like we spoke about a few weeks ago when we talked about The Watchmen, where this is like a direct translation, obviously, of a book, and if you've read the book first, it's almost impossible, isn't it, to get something that's even close to it. Lord of Rings films is one of a few exceptions. I mean, still, for me, the book is just this unbelievable thing.
Yeah.
I don't think you could do a better translation of that into a film. In my opinion, that's pretty much the best you're going to be able to do. But yeah, some of those bits in His Dark Materials are going to be interesting. So I'll look forward to seeing that. But I am watching it weekly. Like you, I enjoyed the first series. I didn't think the film was as terrible as people made out. I didn't think it was that great. Don't get me wrong. I don't think it's a great film or anything, but I didn't think it was that bad. In fact, the first half of the series is actually very similar to the first. It's like padded out version of the first half of the film for me. Even some of the imagery was quite similar. But I think in that first series, they really delivered that second half of it really well, I thought.
Yeah.
They got the balance right.
It's tricky because on this rewatch, I did notice that some things felt a bit rushed still in the series. And then I can't really remember that much of the film, apart from I didn't really like it. But then it made me think, oh my goodness, I mean, how rushed must this have been in a 2-hour movie or however long it was?
Well, they're big old books, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, it's probably, I mean, the 3 of them together. Is it cool? Okay, right, here's one. Yeah. I'm sure that the book I read, but the trilogy was called His Dark Materials, but wasn't one of them Northern Lights? Wasn't that the first
one? Northern Lights is the first one. Actually, I think Northern Lights is the first one in the UK. I think in America it might be called The Golden Compass.
Yeah, because I couldn't figure out Yeah, okay, so that's why the film's called The Golden Compass. Okay, so it's like the Harry Potter one, when they did something similar, I think.
If you say so.
There was, yeah, the first book was called The Philosopher's Stone, and it was called something else, and I can't remember. Or was it the second book? I can't remember now. But yeah, anyway, I think they changed one. And that kind of thing confuses me greatly. Okay. Because I think Northern Lights is a terrific name. Much better name than The Golden Compass for that first book.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really evocative, and that's what it's kind of about.
Yeah, maybe. Could it be that maybe one of our American listeners can fill us in, but maybe in America the Northern Lights aren't known as that? They're just known as the Aurora? Could be.
Yeah, but why change the name of a book?
Okay.
I mean, you know, that's the name of a book.
That's fair.
I think there's a bit of a hang-up of mine, to be frank. I don't like it when things get renamed and all of that stuff. You know, that's the work of art. That's what it is. Boom, done. Out you go into the world.
Yeah.
We're going to market it like this over here. We're going to market it like that over there. So, I don't know. It seems a bit gimmicky in some way. But it doesn't diminish the book. The book I'd definitely recommend those books to anybody who's vaguely interested in that sort of thing. It tackles some really amazing themes, like heavy-hitting themes in that. And it does it really well, I think. It's a very powerful story.
So just going back to this about, you know, it doesn't diminish the contents of the book. So you really are the antithesis of not judging a book by its cover. You don't even want to judge a book by its title.
Yeah, correct. Absolutely. Yeah, that is. But to be honest, the title is normally a big part of the cover. So
that's true. I actually completely disagree with that. I like to always judge a book by its cover because, you know, that's what the cover's there to do. You know, show me something about this book.
Yeah. Well. That doesn't make for... Yeah, I see what you mean. And yes, of course, yeah, in reality, there is some element of truth to that. But, you know, you've got to leave room for somebody doing something new and mysterious.
Oh, I wouldn't want to read a book which was all cover.
Yeah. Just a 300-page description of a picture on the cover. That's what all books are. No, I think we should leave the publishing industry to themselves. Let's not enter that world.
Oh dear. Other than that, I've been doing a bit of reading of some Tolkien stuff, and I did a bit of research back into a couple of things I mentioned last episode, and we can call this section John's Mistakes.
I've got an inkling what one of them is going to be. Can I guess one?
Go ahead.
Because this has been in my head as well, and I've been meaning to look it up for the last couple of weeks since we did the last episode. Is it around for when the first age and the second age and the third age begin and end?
Well, yes. It's to do with something which...
I thought...
well, it's not really such a mistake, because during the podcast we mentioned Numenor, and... You said, is that in the second age? And I said, no, I think that's in the first. I did say, I think that's the first age. And then I did also say, I'm not sure.
Not judging, John.
No. But, you know, just in case any lawyers are listening. Numenor, of course, was formed at the beginning of the second age.
Because the first age is all in the Undying Lands, right? Pretty much, is it? forget I asked that question. I clearly have not. I read The Silmarillion once when I was like 16 or something. So, yeah, okay. Well,
no, I did.
I take it back.
I actually went to, I don't know if you've, I wouldn't say I've really read this, but I do use these books as reference books, which is the Complete History of Middle Earth, which is a Christopher Tolkien edited. Oh, it's a 12 volume piece. It's a wonderful set of books, but it's certainly not something you sit down and read from cover to cover. So I went and had a little dive into that, and if I remember correctly, Numenor was an island which was raised by the Valar at the beginning of the Second Age, and apparently it was one of the longest races during the Second Age, and I think it heavily influenced the Third Age. So I do think we're going to be seeing a lot of Numenor, actually, because it was in relation to that Amazon series, which is set in the Second Age. So I think Numenor is going to feature heavily, actually.
And there is a link between Numenor, Gondor, and the Dúnedain or something. It's the long life that Aragorn has is all traced back to Numenor, isn't it, if I remember correctly? The Numenorians, and then afterwards the kings of Gondor, had long lives because of that bloodline or something.
I believe that's the case.
I remember something about it.
and the other one, the other thing, which also relates to this Amazon series, is I mentioned that there was a possibility of blue wizards.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this one isn't a mistake, but it is a curiosity. Because I mentioned in the podcast that the only reference to the blue wizards was in Unfinished Tales. In fact, I then immediately said, oh, I'm not sure if it is the only reference. But I then went on to talk about how they came to Middle-earth in the Second Age and then went off into the East, never to be seen again. I dug out Unfinished Tales. The reference to the blue wizards in that states that they actually arrive at the same time as Saruman and Gandalf in the Third Age. And I thought, well, this is great. Where have I got this from? So then I went back to the complete history of Middle Earth, which was Tolkien's notes right up until his death. And there's a section in that, I think it's called The People of Middle Earth or something like that. And in that, Tolkien basically goes back on himself and says that the wizards did come to Middle Earth. The blue wizards did come to Middle Earth in the Second Age.
Right.
So it's, I wasn't wrong, but I'm also not right.
But this is why I said I thought they all came together, because I've only read the Unfinished Tales and I've never read the, was it?
Complete history. No one's read
complete
it.
History.
No one's read it.
Apart from your good self, I'd say.
No. You can dip in. You can't read this thing.
I think the Silmarillion's a bit like that too.
Yeah.
You don't have to read it as a novel. You can just pick it up and, I guess maybe, thinking about it, and there are people who are going to be way more into and know more about Tolkien than I do, but it seems to me that The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, those two are kind of exceptions in that they're in this kind of novel form, whereas all the other stuff is fragments and individual tales and just connecting the dots of this huge world he created. So, like, they are like history reference books, I guess, in some way.
Sure,
That was, I guess that's what he was trying to do, wasn't it?
His
whole mythology.
He created this whole mythology, as you say, and then from that was able to scope out this one story of the War of the Ring, which is utterly mind-boggling.
Yeah, it is pretty incredible. He just sat down and wrote it. And that just shows, though, if you do all of that groundwork and you understand that world you've created down to the minute detail, then stories can just flow out of it. Or you just start moving people around and it all happens. It's almost like a stream of consciousness thing grounded in that foundation which you've laid already. It's so fascinating the way different people work, but didn't he say, was it Tolkien? I'm sure it was. Did he say something like, the best decision I made was I started with a map? But when he's talking about his writing of Lord of the Rings, I'm sure, it was Tolkien.
It could well have been. I mean, you know, his original map that he drew is a masterpiece it's a beautiful thing.
It is. I like how it's become kind of iconic as well, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of that was probably to do with the films, obviously, but because they used that image quite a lot, didn't they, in the in the movies? But
Oh, I love that scene in the movies, by the way, which is it's
almost, I know which one you're going to say.
It's actually almost exactly halfway through the entire trilogy.
Is this Faramir as captain? Yeah, they're pointing.
Faramir lays out the map, and he basically explains the story so far. So this army is here, Rohan is here, we are here, here's Mordor. Right, everybody up to date? Let's carry on with the film.
The bit I remember is him pointing at us, Gileath.
Yeah.
We also let it go, like, as if he didn't know where that was. It's like, here it is. Here it is, Faramir. Oh my God, is it that close? Jeez, we better go. I guess if you're doing, like, I mean, how long were those films all together? extended versions. Yeah, what are you talking about? 11 hours worth?
At least, maybe. Yeah.
So, well, maybe 9 hours if you take out the credits. But I guess, yeah, it might not be such a bad idea.
I think it's brilliant.
Here's where we are.
I genuinely think it's a work of genius, that scene. It's just like, okay, anyone lost? Okay, this is where we're up to. Okay, let's have a cup of tea and let's move on. Because actually, I think it in the extended editions, it comes in either just before or just after you have to change discs on the DVD.
Okay, again, to our younger listeners, go back a few episodes and you'll explain what a DVD is. Yeah, oh my God, I actually remember. I remember in the first film, I'll tell you when it was. It was just after they announced I can't really remember this. It's the bit where the Fellowship are all standing there, yep. And Pippin goes, yep. Where are we going? And then that's the end.
That's the end.
In the third film, it's in a really random spot, which is where that big flaming battering ram comes along as bashing the door of Gondor, the doors to the city. What's it called? Krug or something like that. That thing.
Is that where the break
Yeah,
is?
Yeah. It wasn't a DVD. Because I remember, it stuck in my mind, because I thought, that was a really bad moment to have a car. It's like, we're in the middle of an action scene. The first one was perfect.
Yeah, and the second one explains where you're up to.
Oh, I just remembered where the second one was as well. That was a really stupid place to eat. I remember where it was. Do you remember when, I might be wrong about this. I think from memory it's when, you know, when Samwise talking about the Oliphant? The old gaffer's never going to believe this or whatever he says.
Well, it could be then, because that's when they get captured by Faramir.
Yeah, they don't eat the Brace of Conies. Yet again, they fail to eat. And then the Oliphant charges, and I think it's right there. And again, it's in the middle of this, like, action bit. I think.
I can't remember.
And yeah, it'll be shortly after that, obviously, when they'll be with Faramir and he'll be doing the recap. I never thought of that before, by the way. All right, settle down, everybody. Okay, we've taken quite a lot in.
Oh, I love it. All right, I don't know how we got here, but... so this week is a spoiler episode where we'll be discussing a quest in depth, and the quest we'll be discussing is the Dead Marshes. So if you are indeed trying to avoid spoilers and you haven't played that quest... it's probably best just to skip this entire episode and come back to it whenever you wish to. But if you don't mind spoilers, or if you have played this quest, then we're going to start talking about it now. So, the Dead Marshes.
Okay, so I do have the insert sheet.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Here.
Oh, and actually, I think there was certainly one part of it which is definitely necessary for this one. But let's read it anyway, because it's always fun.
Yeah, okay, all right. So, here it is. The Dead Marshes. Difficulty level, 5.
Right down the middle.
We'll talk about it later. Okay, so there's a little bit of text here which says, after regaining his trail in the hills of Emyn Will, it's made me say it again. I can't believe it, there's no escape. The heroes have tracked Gollum to the Dead Marshes, into which he has fled in a last-ditch effort to avoid pursuit. Feeling that the hunt is coming to a close, the heroes enter the treacherous marshlands, ready to capture the creature alive. And then that's all it says. Then it's just, it tells you which cards it's played with. And then there are two sections which talk about rules. Is it worth talking about them straight away, or should we come back to them once we come across them in the cards? I mean, thinking about what...
Yeah, go on. Let's jump to the cards. Jump to the quest card and let's see what happens.
And we'll come back to this almost immediately. I think it makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so there are only two quest cards in this quest. The first one's called Into the Marshes. So it's card 1A. It says, you have followed Gollum's trail for days and are now closing in fast pursuit. No. That was incorrect. You have followed Gollum's trail for days and are now closing in fast pursuit. In a last-ditch effort to escape you, the creature has fled into the dead marshes. Mm. Okay, and set up. Search the encounter deck for Gollum and add it to the staging area. Shuffle the encounter deck, then reveal one card per player from the encounter deck and add it to the staging area. And that's all the instructions on that card. So,
okay. All right.
You'll get a random card from the encounter deck per player, but you will have Gollum.
Yep, so we've got to go and find Gollum first.
So here's Gollum, and there's a crazy-looking critter, isn't he?
He doesn't look well, does he?
He's seen better days. And he is of type Gollum.
Hmm.
And the text on Gollum says, if Gollum ever has 8 or more resource tokens on him, shuffle him back into the encounter deck.
Okay.
And he also has a forced effect. At the end of the quest phase, the party must make an escape test. What's an escape test? We'll come back to it. Dealing one card per player from the encounter deck. If this test is failed, place 2 resource tokens on Gollum.
Ooh.
So you can straight away see there that, you know, if that's 2 resources on Gollum, once he has 8 tokens on him, he disappears into the encounter deck.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to try and find him. So what is an escape test?
To the sheet.
To the insert. Okay. Escape test. While playing this scenario, players are at times instructed to make an escape test. These tests represent Gollum's attempts to escape their pursuit. To make an escape test, a player first commits characters to the test. A character must exhaust to commit to an escape test.
Yeah.
Each committed character counts its willpower strength for the test. After committing characters to the test, the players may take actions or play event cards. If a single player is required to make an escape test, only that player may commit characters he controls to the test. If the party is required to make an escape test, all players have the option of committing characters they control to the test.
Do you think they could have used the word test a few more times in this explanation?
I mean, they probably could. There was a lot of test. It was a testing paragraph. Okay. Then it goes on.
Go on then.
It says, you're starting to get what's going to happen here. Once the characters are committed, a number of cards, as instructed by the card text dictating the escape test. So, for example, we've just seen on that Gollum card, you have to deal 1 card per player.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So once characters are committed, the number of cards, as instructed by the card text, are dealt from the encounter deck. Many of the cards in this encounter deck have a bold escape value. Any card that does not have a printed escape value is considered to have a base escape value of 0.
Naught.
Disappointing lack of use of the word naught there, in my opinion. When dealing cards for an escape test, ignore all other effects on the dealt cards. Once these cards are dealt, the total committed willpower is compared to the total dealt escape value to determine if the escape test is passed or failed. Slightly long-winded explanation, but we're getting to the crux of it now.
Yeah.
If the total committed willpower is higher than the total dealt escape value, the escape test is passed and nothing happens. If the total committed willpower is equal to or lower than the total dealt escape value, the escape test is failed.
Yeah.
And the players follow the instructions for failing the escape test from the card that required the test to be made. After an escape test, all cards dealt for that test are placed in the encounter discard pile. So, for example, on that Gollum card, you can see that at the end of every quest phase, the party, says all players, must make an escape test, dealing 1 card per player from the encounter deck. If this test is failed, place 2 resource tokens on Gollum. So, if your total committed willpower is more than whatever's dealt there, nothing happens.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you get 2 resource on Gollum. And once you've got 8... he's escaped.
Simple. I don't see why they didn't just put all that on the card.
Yeah. There is an example as well.
I don't think we need an example.
I don't think we need that. I'm just wondering how Jeremy felt about this. It's got quite a long example there as well. But we won't go there.
Okay.
There is a final bit of instruction.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
But again, I'm going to come back to the insert sheet once we reach that point in the quest.
I don't know about you, but I'm already confused, and I just played this yesterday.
I know. Well, shall I flip over that quest card?
Let's do it.
So you flip over the quest card. Some more nice artwork of marsh, like desolate looking marshland. You can see straight away you need 12 progress.
Yep.
And there's nothing special about this card, just has a quote from the Two Towers.
Ooh.
I'm not going to read. Shall I read it out?
Is it nice?
I don't know. I can't remember. I read it yesterday when I replayed. I'm not going to read it.
Okay.
I'll leave that to place. So all you need to do is get 12 progress tokens on here to get through this quest card.
Yeah. So I guess the main mechanic then of this initial quest card is that extra escape test that we're forced to do at the end of the quest phase, which the Golem objective card is forcing us to do.
Right.
Right.
It's a tricky one to know how to tackle, isn't it?
Well, I guess just looking at sort of tactically then, you know that there's going to be an escape test at the end of each quest phase, and you know that if you fail this, resource tokens are going to end up on Golem, and we really probably know we shouldn't allow him to get shuffled into the encounter deck because we're trying to capture him. So the only thing that springs out is that we should try and plow through this as quickly as possible. Like, we're giving Golem as few chances to escape as possible.
Yeah, I guess what you need to balance there, though, what becomes apparent quite quickly in this quest is, so to do that, you've got a quest for 12 on this quest card.
Yeah.
But then you also need to use your same questing abilities to pass the escape test every game.
Ah, yes, because you have to exhaust your characters to commit to the escape test. Very true.
Exactly. And I do have a question about that escape test. Is now the right time to ask it? It says...
It might be.
It says at the end of the quest phase.
Okay, I'm glad you brought this up.
The way I played it, which is... It would have been better for me if it was kind of... It doesn't say after the quest phase.
No.
It says at the end of a quest phase. So I treated that as being, it's still part of the quest phase.
Okay. Right.
But that was actually a disadvantage to me. And I'll tell you why it was when we talk about how we tackled the quest. But that was the way I interpreted it anyway. But
okay. Do you want me to dive into that? Because this is actually one of the key aspects of this quest, which makes it a little bit trickier than it might first appear. And I don't think it's a problem to talk about it now, because indeed the Golem card is saying at the end of the quest phase you have to do this escape test. So as we are going to be talking about how we got through the quest with our various decks, I think it is important to note what it actually means when it says at the end of the quest phase, because I agree it's not particularly clear. In fact, it's not clear at all. And this did get raised back with Fantasy Flight back in 2011, 2012, whenever this quest came out. And it was completely officially answered. So that, again, there is a happy ending to this where we do have a proper answer. But you will have to bear with me because it's,
okay.
It's one of those.
Okay, sorry. I've done it straight away.
Okay, so here's the deal. Okay. This escape test happens, as it states, at the end of the quest phase. Now, the quest phase, as with all phases of this game, are broken down into smaller sort of sub-phases. So, for instance, in the combat phase, the first thing you do is engagement checks. That's a sub-phase of the combat phase. Okay? So, the quest phase is actually broken up into five sub-phases. The first one is committing characters, where obviously you commit your characters to the quest by exhausting them. The second one is staging, which is revealing the cards from the encounter deck. The third is an action window. The fourth is quest resolution, which is resolving the quest. You know, have you successfully quested? And the fifth is called end phase. Okay, which is essentially an action window, which is the end of the quest phase, but it is in itself a separate sub phase. Okay, I told you you'd have to bear with me.
Where is this information coming from these subphases? Is this in the
original rules, and it's also now it's in the rules reference, because you don't get an actual rule book in with the in the thing.
Yeah.
So, but these are basically, they're not really called subphases, but these are the steps of each phase.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And the final step of the quest phase is the end phase. And it's essentially, it's an action window at the end of the quest. Now, it was answered when it was just asked directly to Fantasy Flight, when does this escape test happen? The answer is it happens during that end phase. Okay? So that is why it is at the end of the quest phase.
What happens in the end phase? Sorry?
It's essentially, it's an action window where you are no longer committed to the quest, but your characters are still exhausted. And it's basically every phase of the game has an end phase to it, where you can perform actions before moving on to the next phase.
Right.
Okay, so that's when you can perform an action and you're not yet in the travel phase, but you've finished questing, but you're not in the travel phase yet. You're going to do some stuff. And that is the end phase. And that is where they deemed that this escape test happened. Now, why this is important, and I think this is far too overcomplicated for a quest so close to the beginning of the game, that I think they dug themselves a big hole here with this escape test happening in this phase, is that, just to give an example, if you were playing with Eowyn and you committed her to the quest and then you discarded a card to boost her willpower, okay, that's her effect, you're allowed to do that once per round. She would then have willpower of 5 at that point. Now, if you had unexpected courage on her, you could ready her after she had committed to the quest. The effect of her having +1 willpower would actually stop working at the beginning of the end phase. Are you still with me? Because that's when all...
But that doesn't make any sense. So the original question was, does the escape test happen during the quest phase or after? And what you're saying to me is both or neither.
Yeah, it happens.
Right?
That's why I said you'd have to.
If it happens in the quest phase,
yeah,
right? Forgetting sub... I mean, you know, this is... And the way I played it was, okay, let me say, I used Eowyn.
Yeah.
And I didn't use any kind of unexpected courage, anything, even though they were available to me, on her. Precisely because I didn't want to fall into a potential trap here. But the way I treated it was that the escape test, was part of the quest phase.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I treated it.
Yeah.
So if something was happening until the end of the phase, that would still be the same phase in which the quest phase and the escape test are in that same phase. That's the way I played it.
Technically, you're right, but... This is where the real letter of the law of the game comes in, which is, I think it gets a bit over the top. Because, let's say Faramir's ability. Now, I used Faramir in this quest. So Faramir, you could trigger his action by exhausting him and giving +1 willpower to
everybody.
Everybody until the end of the phase.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if I triggered Faramir to help everyone during the quest, that +1 wouldn't be active during the escape test, which I think is counterintuitive. And the reason for that happening is that +1 is a passive ability. And then because Gollum's escape test is a forced effect, the passive ability has to end before the forced effect can trigger. It's a minefield. But basically...
Well, so then the answer would have been the escape test takes place after the quest phase, but before the travel.
Yeah, that would be much easier.
If they just
said there is an extra phase.
Yeah. Well, just after the quest phase, before the travel phase, you do the escape test. End of story.
That would be much, much simpler.
Okay, but to all intents and purposes... For people listening or who are confused about this, would that be the answer, to treat the escape test as something that happens after the quest phase but before the travel phase?
Yes, except for one thing. Yes, absolutely. That's the best, simplest, easiest, least confusing way to look at it. But the only reason that you shouldn't do that is that if you're utilizing any effects which are limit once per a phase, then you could only do that once during the quest phase. So therefore, you could only choose to do that effect either to influence questing or to influence the escape test.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? So that's the only reason. You can't make the escape test its own little phase and then choose that to be the once per phase, even though technically it is. Because if you... Ah!
Yeah, but then you fall into trap the other way because Faramir's one. So what does Faramir say? He says, exhaust Faramir to choose a player.
Yeah.
Playing one player, choose yourself. Each character controlled by that player gets +1 willpower until the end of a phase.
Yeah.
So for that card, it works much better if you're saying that it's a separate phase.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Because what tells you, you know, this is what I think this is, yeah, I think you're right. This is one thing that can, I think sometimes one of the, well, I won't call it a drawback, but one of the nuances of this game is sometimes you get these things where you end up having to look things up online and yeah. And it all gets a bit frustrating and you kind of lose the flow of, you know, it's probably the only drawback I've found playing this game is sometimes I can, you know, I will much rather, instead of spending half an hour trying to figure out something online in the middle of my game, I'll just say, you know what, I'm going to treat it like it's the same phase or whatever and just crack on. And if it turns out I got it wrong later, then fine, I'll replay it later. Or if I feel like I need to, you know, if I feel like that genuinely changed the outcome of what I was doing, yeah, then fine. I would advise anyone who's maybe just playing this for the first time not to get maybe too hung up on this point.
Yeah.
And just crack on.
No, I agree. And it really, it is only a few niche cases, but it is things with characters that you go, oh, I can get two uses out of this, which is Eowyn and Faramir really are the two which jump out from the core set. Is that, you know, because it's not that unusual idea to put Unexpected Courage onto Eowyn, boost her willpower, use her to quest, ready her, and then use her for the escape test. Because it is important to know that you wouldn't get that extra boost during the escape test. And it's the same with Faramir, that you couldn't use Faramir's ability during questing and keep that ability running during the escape test. So you, if you want to use Faramir, you have to wait until the action window during the escape test. And that,
yeah.
So it's, I agree. I actually think they've just made a mistake by where they've placed it. They should have just said there's an extra phase.
Yeah, and just be done with it.
Yeah.
And you know, and if there's one or two effects which give you a +1 advantage, then so be it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, because if it was an extra phase with Faramir, for instance, he's already exhausted. So the chances are you haven't got Unexpected Courage on him to ready him and then use his ability again. I mean, I don't know. It's a tricky one. I mean, they started down a road which they couldn't really get out of, I don't think. But yeah.
I erred on the side of caution so that I would make sure that whatever was happening, I would not be gaining an advantage twice in any way, because I thought that would probably be some kind of weird rule. So I just erred on that side of caution to make sure I wasn't, you know, cheating or whatever.
Yeah. Well, actually, you actually then played it completely correctly. Yeah. Yes, you did. Just know you played it correctly.
Yeah. It's good to know. Well, okay. Well, there we go. That's so we've got halfway through the Golem card.
I swear I probably made it even more confusing. But believe me, if you look online, it gets even more confusing than this, with people going, well, hang on, what about this? What
exactly. About that? I think, and that's the thing, I think it's almost impossible to make it work every single way without having really specific rules. Therefore, it's probably better just to treat it one way or the other and just go with it.
This will be my last thing I say on this, because if you really want to know what the specific rule is, the specific rule is during a phase, any passive effect must end at the end phase. Okay? So therefore, anything like +1 given by Faramir or +1 willpower given to Eowyn would come to an end on that last part of the quest phase. And it is at that point that you do the escape test. So therefore, those passive effects have ended. You do have the option to then do actions again, But if your action was once per phase, it's over. I think I made it more confusing again. All right, let's move on.
And if anyone has any questions on this, please feel free to write into us. And we'll give a short and succinct and definitive answer. I would say, though, that was a very worthy effort, John. You've obviously looked into that. I didn't go through the pain, but you did. So I thank you for doing that on our behalf.
But I feel like I put everyone through a lot of pain unnecessarily. I'm so sorry.
Well, actually, you know, there are going to be different kinds of people at the end of the day. There are going to be people who are going to be real sticklers for the rules and not going to feel right at all unless they... So they will want to look it up, those kind of people, which is absolutely valid. And then there's going to be people like me who are a bit more cowboy, I guess. Because they are to hell with it. I'll just do it this way and see what happens, deal with any consequences later. And some people in between. So I think it's good to explore it. And, you know, we have seen a couple of things like this crop up before, and we will certainly see things like this crop up again. So I think it is a good guide for people to say, well, how do I want to play this game? I'm lucky in that I've got your good self who's got more experience in these things, and you've probably been through this pain on most of these quests anyway, you know, over the last few years. So I could just ask you the odd question and you could tell me. Okay, I'll go with that.
Yeah. Am I allowed to do this? Yes or no?
It's normally no, isn't it?
Yeah. Don't tell me why. Just tell me that I can.
Oh, there's Sauron again. The worst ones are when I'm umming and ahhing whether to ask you. And I thought, oh, I really should, shouldn't I? It's the right thing to do, even though I might not like the answer. But then the answer you give is worse than what was in my mind was the worst possible outcome. So they say, yes, it is the worst, but also, have you considered this? It's like, oh, God damn it. That's happened a few times. So I'm a bit wary about asking you now.
Okay, well, I apologise. Should we move off the first cut?
Yes, so... So yes, so card one, as we've said, so basically it's really around, as we've seen, you're trying to win those escape tests to stop that resource building up on Gollum, so you lose him, you don't want to lose him, while you're trying to quest through the 12, which isn't a small amount, obviously, at the same time.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and especially as you say, that if you are having to keep characters back for this escape test... then it does take a little time to quest through those initial 12.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, but once you are through it, you move on to card 2A. And all it says on the front here is, after a tiring pursuit through the treacherous marshland...
After a tiring explanation from John.
after a sit-down discussion around the fire... After a tiring pursuit through the treacherous marshland, you have cornered Gollum and move in for the capture. And that's all it says. And you flip it over. You see straight away that there's only 3 progress required here.
Piece of cake.
And it says forced. After this stage is defeated, the first player chooses a player. That player must pass an escape test, dealing 1 card from the encounter deck for each resource token on Gollum to capture him. So straight away here, now you see the value in keeping those resources down. If Gollum is not captured at this time, reset for quest deck to stage 1B.
Here we go again.
If this final escape test is passed, the players have captured Gollum and won the game.
Woohoo! Now this, right, and I swear this is the last time I mention it. When you do this escape test, chances are you've got through this quest by questing successfully. That would be during the quest phase, no questions asked. Anything that you've added to Eowyn at that point or added by Faramir would still count because you are just banging the quest phase at that point. It's not at any... It's at the point you put the token on.
Yeah, and what's probably going to happen is you're 99 times out of 100, you've just quested successfully to get here.
Yeah.
In fact, almost maybe 100%.
Yeah, the only way I could I think you could do it is with Legolas by killing an enemy or something like that.
Exactly.
Very, very unlikely.
There is a final bit of text on the insert sheet.
Oh,
which says
we're still at the beginning of the podcast. Apparently,
it says reset for quest deck. Now, I don't like this being on the insert sheet, and that's why I left it. until the end. So as we know, we've had a bit of a love-hate relationship with the insert sheets, haven't we?
Yeah.
Because this is a massive spoiler, I think. And it says, reset the quest deck.
Yeah.
While playing this scenario, players might be instructed to reset the quest deck to stage 1B. I mean, like, come on. To do this, the players take the previously defeated stage 1 quest card, return it to the quest deck as if they are just beginning that stage. Since the quest deck is resetting to stage 1B, the setup instructions on side 1A should not be followed again.
Yeah.
Any progress tokens that were on the current quest are removed before the quest deck resets. I mean, it's, yeah, obvious. Progress tokens that were on the active location, however, remain on that location. All other cards, including those in the staging area, remain unchanged. So, actually, to be fair, I can imagine there might be some questions about this. But so I do. I mean, this is, again, it's a tricky one for them to be fair. But I don't like knowing in advance what's going to happen. And you know, the first time you play it, you're going to find out, right?
But I think you're right, though. Perhaps they should have just maybe on those inserts said, there should have been a line saying, start playing now. And then after that, on the other side of it, maybe there's like a mini FAQ. So you know that, okay, what's this reset? Do I have to take the tokens off? Do I reset it? And then you can go to that FAQ and you'll see a list of possible questions. The fact that it's sort of built into the introduction, I agree, is a bit spoilery.
Yeah. But I do understand fair reasoning why, just to avoid questions. It's a tricky one. But yeah, I mean, it was a bit annoying. Not annoying, but just, you know, I just felt, because I'd forgotten this quest.
Oh, yeah, me too.
To be honest. I think I played it only once and completed it, thinking, and this is the first time I've gone back to play it, and that was months ago. So I barely remembered anything about this.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Anyway, yes, so they have a quest cards.
Yeah, so actually, then what I said earlier about the main mechanic being the escape test is 100% true. I mean, there's really nothing else happening from the quest cards on this. You have to quest through it, and there will be some escape tests that you have to do in order to try and stop Gollum from escaping and eventually capturing him. So that's basically it. And of course, the encounter deck is doing its business, and So, yeah, I mean, it's tricky for me, this one, because I actually think the sort of mechanic of the escape test is quite good. You know, you're in the marshes. It sort of represents Gollum sort of evading you. I'd actually prefer it was called an evade test rather than escape, because the escape, in my mind, pictures the fact that you've got him and he's escaped. But actually, you haven't got him yet. He's evading you. And it's whether or not you're getting closer or not would have invoked a sort of a stronger visual image for me. But yeah, I think it's not a bad mechanic. I mean, it could have been a bit clearer of when it takes place.
I like the mechanic. And I think what you realise when you play this quest is, yes, we haven't spoken about the encounter deck yet, of course. But what you see straight away is, you know, you need some questing ability to get through, obviously, the quest and the escape test. You know, you're going to need some. If you go in with hardly any questing ability, I think you're going to struggle probably on this quest.
Well, we'll go into our decks in a minute, but I initially thought, I'll put together the Rohan deck that we put together a few episodes ago. I thought that'd be fun to take this into here and see how these guys do. Like, same as you, I couldn't remember this quest at all. So I'd made the decision before I'd even looked at the quest cards or the insert sheet. And then before I put that together, I thought, I won't. I think it'd be nice to explore some of the lore cards that we discussed last episode. So I built a completely non sort of quest-based deck of leadership and lore, just to really sort of revisit some of those cards. And on my initial run through, I thought, oh my God, that I've so built the wrong deck for this quest. But to my surprise, it fared not just well, it fared brilliantly against this quest. So that's a little tease for later when we talk about how we got through it. But there is definitely more than one way to get through this quest. Yeah, like you say, at first you go, a spirit heavy, or like you say, a Rohan deck is perfect for getting through this. And I'm sure it is, but there are other ways.
Yeah. And there's also a couple of bits and bobs to look out for, so which I think brings us neatly onto the encounter deck. So shall we... I think I've got all the cards which are kind of new in this encounter deck here. Shall we go through? I think there's only one new enemy that we come across.
Yes, there's only one new enemy, yeah.
Do you want me to...
Yeah, go for it.
This one? So this is the giant marsh worm.
Ooh, look at him.
He is a nasty, nasty looking beast. And looks very much marshy. And he has an engagement cost of 36. He has a threat of 1. He hits for 3, a shield of 2, and he has 6 hit points.
Oof.
So a bit of a toughie. It's a creature. Has a forced effect. Remove 2 damage from giant marshworm at the end of each round. So if you're going to take this guy out, that means you've got to do it fairly quickly or he's going to keep healing himself.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he does hit for 3 as well. So it can be a nasty one.
Do you know what I did with this? I mean, you'll appreciate this. Because, like I said, I took that lore deck out based on a lot of the cards we discussed last episode. And you may recall I mentioned the Mirkwood Runner. I'd never really managed to get him to work. So I brought 3 of them along for the ride.
They're great, aren't they?
Well, it was great against the giant marshworm, I tell you that much. Because what I tended to do was sneak attack Gandalf out, if I could, put 4 damage on him, then attack once with the Mirkwood Runner. Dead worm. Perfect.
Fantastic.
Just to in case anyone's forgetting what the Mirkwood Runner did, he attacks for 2, but when he attacks alone, you ignore the defense of the enemy. So that means that it would just go straight past the 2 defense of the giant worm and kill him dead if you've already got 4 damage on him from Gandalf.
Do you know what's striking me now? Because I've always been a fan of Mirkwood Runner, and now I'm thinking, what if you could beef up one of them as well with some elvish weaponry? He can do some serious damage on his own.
Yeah.
With no shield to worry about.
Yeah.
Ooh. No, good one. Come on.
I have one slight bit of beef.
Uh-oh.
With the
when I look at the giant marshworm, I do not think of beef. That is some meaty substance I do not want to come across.
Ooh, no. That does not look salted.
Salted worm.
And that's the flavor text. There's a little bit of flavor text at the bottom here, and it's another quote from Gollum. He gets around in this quest, and it says, "No birds here." And I'll just stop there.
Yeah, you don't need to say anymore.
Because in my hand, I'm holding the Eastern Crows.
Yeah. Just wanted very good point.
Just wanted to call Gollum out on that one.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay, so I had picked out another enemy we've come across before, which falls into a similar category, but we'll come to that in a second. But yeah, good one. I didn't pick that up about the birds. And why would there be no birds in the marshes?
Well, I don't know. It's a very good question.
But okay, fair enough. Gollum got confused there. Okay, so that's the only new enemy. And by the way, I actually used... Well, I didn't have Mirkwood Runner, but I used a similar tactic to try and soften up the worm. And generally, I'd use Gandalf to take him out.
Sorry, soften up the worm. It's conjuring up.
Oh, God. With Gandalf stuff. And, anyway, that's the giant marshworm. Giant marshworm. Okay, so we have... 3 locations and I think 4 treachery cards. Shall we location first? Do you want to pick one out?
Sure.
Or were you thinking of that? Look, whichever one you want, whichever treachery or location you so desire.
Well, I've got a little something to say about everything.
Okay. That's unlike you, John.
This quest has done this to me. One of them, again, is a little bit of a rules thing. I'm going to do the rules thing first because then I think I might have got it out of my system. Okay. And that's the Fens and Mires. It's a location. It has a threat of 2, and it requires 2 progress to get through it. And it is of type Dead Marshes. and it has a forced effect. And it says, after the players travel to this location, place 1 resource token on Gollum. Okay, so as we can see here, straight off the bat, there are obviously locations here, and we'll come to the treacheries in a minute, which will also be starting to put resources onto Gollum. So it's not just going to be those escape tests that we have to worry about when it comes to stopping getting those 8 resources onto Gollum. So even more apparent of how quickly we have to get through this quest so we don't lose Gollum into the encounter deck. But my one, and I promise it will be quick, rules thing on this. The effect is a forced effect. Forced. After the players travel to this location, place 1 resource token on Gollum. It is not a travel effect. Okay, and the reason that is important is I think one of the cards we discussed last week is Strider's Path.
Oh, when you bypass the travel effect.
Exactly. And Strider's Path allows you to travel to a location instantly, bypassing any travel effect. This would not be bypassed because it's a forced effect and you have traveled there, because Strider's Path says response after a location is revealed from the encounter deck, immediately travel to that location without resolving its travel effect. If another location is currently active, return it to the staging area. So the wording on that states that you will be traveling to it. So that means the wording on the Fens and Myers will trigger, because it's a forced effect after the players travel to this location. It's the double use of the word travel on those cards.
Yeah.
So that won't stop you bypassing it. However, if you happen to have the Rohan ally, what's her name again? The West Road Traveler, she has a response. After you play West Road Traveler from your hand, switch the active location with any other location in the staging area. Now that doesn't mention traveling. You're just swapping them out. So in that case, this forced effect wouldn't trigger because it says forced after the players travel to this location.
See, I would assume that it would trigger.
Yeah.
Because, okay, so technically by the words, it doesn't say travel, but thematically you're traveling there.
Yeah.
So when you get to the Fens and Myers, Gollum has a better chance of getting away from you, because that's what the Fens and Myers...
Yeah.
Is. So, yeah, it's one of those ones where I don't know what the right thing is there, because it's a kind of, yeah, it's between the semantics on the card, which are really important, the way this game is structured. It's all about semantics in many ways. But then also thematically, why would that logically be bypassed? Interesting.
Yeah, it's the same way as why would a normal travel effect be bypassed when you use the West Road Traveler? I mean, that's just the bonus of using that... that card, isn't it?
Yeah, true. That's true. Yep. Oh, that's because you've taken Strider's Path.
I'm taking the West Road Traveler's Path.
No, okay, yeah.
You go off with your Strider. I'm going off with this filly.
Has she got a horse?
She does.
There are 2 fillies. Okay. All right, so it's Fenton. By the way, on all of these locations on the marshes, I love the murky artwork.
Ah, well, okay.
It's terrific.
I mean, there's something about this quest in general, which it's so grey and grim. And I'm saying that in a positive light.
Absolutely. It's misty, it's dank, cold.
It fills me with gloom.
Yeah, it's a gloomy place. It's for dead marshes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Dead Marshes scene from the books really stuck with me, you know, when I read that. And it's just such an intense, heavy moment. I mean, beyond the sort of history of the fact that there was a great battle and the spirits of the soldiers are all in the marshes. Forget that for a moment. Just the fact that it's so dank and endless and wet and gloomy and... It's the Britishness in us coming out now. We're just drawn to it.
You're absolutely correct. I totally agree with that. In many ways, it's almost the heart of, well, maybe that's overstating it, but it's almost like the heart of the story in a way, the Dead Marshes, I think. That's the real bit where you're really exposed to the desolation. And, I think a couple of episodes you're talking about, or a few episodes ago, we're talking about the way loss is dealt with and destruction and that kind of endless stillness after the war and how it differs from the book to the film and all. Mm. We're talking about all that. I think this bit about the Dead Marshes encapsulates that perfectly.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, just it's incredible, isn't it? I mean, just it's endless horrible, hellish place.
Yeah, yeah.
With no life, but and you know, dead bodies in the ground. And, I mean, yeah, it's so powerful.
I mean, to quote Gollum, "No birds here." Oh.
He was no Tolkien, was he, Gollum?
Oh dear. Yeah, no, I love it. And to come back to your point, the artwork really on all these cards encapsulates that feeling so much. I absolutely love it.
So something I've banged on, and we've both talked about in past episodes, about taking the time to look at the cards. I think this is one of the quests which really, really benefits from doing that.
Yeah,
you know, to build that atmosphere of what's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that was Fens and Myers. There are two other locations. I think it would make sense to talk about the Impassable Bog next. Only has a threat of one, but requires a whopping 12 to get through. So it is passable, but it's almost impassable. They require 12 to go through there.
Yeah, it should really be called the Almost Impassable Bog, shouldn't
it? Yes, very difficult to pass bog. It's also of type Dead Marshes. It says, when revealed, place one resource token on Gollum for each location card in the staging area. Now, Fens and Marshes did not make me think of any additional rules, but you sort of wisely and cunningly thought of that. This one, however, did. So, there are no locations in the staging area, and you reveal Impassable Bog. Do you put a resource token on Gollum for the Impassable Bog?
No.
Is it not? Because the way, yeah, cool. Okay, because I thought from discussions we had a while back now, that's when when it's revealed.
Yeah.
That's before it lands in the staging area.
Hasn't basically hit the staging area yet.
Right, cool. Okay, so I thought that's another good one for people to know.
Yeah.
So it's only for each location which is in the staging area at the moment you reveal this card. Yeah. So when revealed literally means when revealed.
Yeah, yeah. But it's a good one. That's definitely a good one. But yeah, no, that's it. Absolutely, yeah.
Cool.
And it's got 7 victory points. I mean, victory points don't really come into play in this scenario, but yeah, they really think it's tough to get past.
Yeah, I managed to get through this one yesterday, but normally I've just left it in the staging area because it's only one threat.
Yeah.
That's the Northern Trackers for you.
I think it's kind of almost designed to just be left in the staging area. It just makes your general questing harder. And I love the theme of that, by the way. There's an impassable bog this way, so we have
can't
to
go that way.
We can't go that way. So actually our quest is now harder. I mean, we could try and get through it. Like, no, I think that's going to be even harder, to be honest.
And I also love how that works with the trackers, because I had 3 Northern Trackers, which eventually, after 4 rounds, I managed to get all 3 out. And it's quite funny. But anyway, they managed to get through it. And it's like 3 trackers going over, oh, we found a path.
Yeah.
It took 3 of them ages to do it. It's like, okay, let's go through that, you know. I love the way that whole theme works with that. Brilliant. Okay. All right, so there's one last location.
Oh, I hate this one. Oh.
Do you want to read it?
Oh, why not? Why not? Okay, so this is the heart of the marshes. So we're deep, deep.
The heart of darkness.
Oh. Okay. And this has a threat of 3. Takes 4 progress to get through it. It's type Dead Marshes. And it states, while the heart of the marshes is the active location, all cards dealt from the encounter deck for escape tests get +1 escape. Then it has a little extra here. It says, cards receive this bonus even if they do not have a printed escape value. So as mentioned when we were talking about the escape test, that a lot of the cards in the Dead Marshes set have this escape test value on that you will be seeing when you're making your escape tests. But of course, all the cards from the other encounter sets that make up this encounter deck don't have that escape test. Of course, they're from the core set. But when the heart of the marshes is the active location, everything's got 1 on that escape test. And that, that could be nasty.
Yeah, and it's quite cunning. I like the fact they've made it a threat of 3, but it takes 4 to get through it.
Yeah.
So you've really got a plan. Well, if I leave this in a staging area, it's going to stitch up my questing, but if I put it in, you know, how many rounds are going to take to get 4? Maybe just 1 round, maybe 2.
Yeah.
But that could, you know, stitch me up an escape test. It's a really well-balanced card, that one, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it at all. But it does lead us quite nicely onto the treacheries, because as you can imagine, most of the treacheries here are going to be focused around the escape tests themselves. So, and actually sort of three of them are all quite similar. And I once again, I have stuff to say about them.
go on. You're much better prepared than I.
Well, okay. Well, I'm going to group these together then, if you don't mind.
Okay.
So there are three treacheries here. Well, there are four in total, but there's three I want to talk about now. And they are all type escape. And the three of them are Nightfall, The Lights of the Dead, and Through the Mist. All very evocative names there. So I'll just start with the first one I've got here, which is Nightfall. And it says, when revealed, the first player makes an escape test. Okay, so this will be an extra escape test that you'll be making during the quest phase before you even get to Gollum's escape test. So you're going to be, you've quested, you have to make an escape test, and then you'll have to make another escape test once you get to the end of the quest phase. So when revealed, the first player makes an escape test, dealing two cards from the encounter deck. If this test is failed, place one resource token on Gollum and raise each player's threat by two. Okay, so that's one player will be making the escape test there, but every player will have their threat raised if you fail it. And then I'm just going to go through these other ones quickly. So the Lights of the Dead, again, an escape treachery. It says, when revealed, each player must make an escape test, dealing two cards from the encounter deck for each test. Each player that fails this test places one resource token on Gollum and raises his threat by one. So potentially in a two-player game, that one gets a bit harder because you've got more chance of resource tokens hitting Gollum, and yeah, the threat increases, less of a issue with that one. And then finally, there is Through the Mist. And that one says, when revealed, the first player makes an escape test counting attack instead of willpower, dealing two cards from the encounter deck. If this test is failed, place one resource token on Gollum and raise each player's threat by one. So you can see the theme there. Basically, there are three treacheries which will basically force you to make an extra escape test, and they all have relatively similar outcomes if you fail them, that you'll get a threat increase and you'll be forced to put at least one extra resource token onto Gollum. Now, the reason I want to just talk about these is when I first came back to this quest, you may remember on quest card 1A, during the setup, you have to reveal a card. After setting up Gollum, you have to reveal a card.
This happened to me yesterday.
And the very first time I played it, I revealed Through the Mist. So I had my heroes out, and it says Through the Mist, just a reminder, the first player makes an escape test counting attack instead of willpower, dealing two cards from the encounter deck. If this test is failed, place one resource token on Gollum and raise each player's threat by one. I mean, I won't go into the details, but basically I exhausted two of my heroes. I failed the test. My threat went up and there was a resource token on Gollum before I'd even started the game. But that was the first time. And I thought, it was at that point when I thought, oh, I really should have put together a spirit questing deck for this quest. But I came to a realization very quickly with these cards, and maybe you'll have a counter argument for this, but I found in a one-player scenario, whenever I got one of these treacheries, I just didn't perform the test.
Oh, I did the same, yeah. When I got one of these, I just thought, you know what? They don't come up that often. Really, unless you're very unlucky, I'll just take the hit as the one resource and focus on not getting the two resource on Gollum's,
yeah,
on Gollum's one, and increase my threat by one if I need to as well.
Yeah,
and that's generally what I did. Yes, yeah, so I followed the same tactic as,
yeah, because as you. It just doesn't add up. I mean, the chances of you getting past two cards from the encounter deck in this extra escape test are very slim, and so there's a chance that you're going to fail the test anyway. And then you're stuck with exhausted characters and you still have another escape test to do.
Yeah. Well, to me, it's very simple. It's like this test is harder on each treachery card. It's harder to pass the test, but the punishment is less. Yeah. Whereas on the Gollum one, it's easier to pass and the punishment's more. So which one are you going to focus on? It was a no for me, very quickly became a no-brainer. I thought, you know what? What, you know, and if I end up with two or maybe even three resource tokens on Golem because of that, fine. But if I fail the Golem one three times, two or three times, that's four or six, you know, suddenly you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So, you know, and notwithstanding Golem escaping, obviously at the end of Quest 2B, you need to pass the escape test.
Yeah.
And however many resource tokens Golem's got on him, that's how many cards you have to draw. So that one, you know, it's all about keeping that one down as well. So yeah, I came up, it wouldn't surprise me if lots of people in one player had this same tactic as well. Yeah, but I very quickly came to that conclusion too. Just didn't bother doing them.
And I do think the one which affects more players, which is the Lights of the Dead, which each player must make a escape test. I would just say if you're playing two player, that's the one you would actually play out, and then the other two I would just ignore.
Yeah.
And just fail them. Just fail them.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so, yeah, so in a way, I'm a little disappointed by those treacheries. They don't really... Because as soon as you work out that you can just not bother, they don't become that scary.
They all have wonderful artwork there.
Yeah, well, so you get to see the artwork.
Yeah.
Well, I say those aren't particularly scary. There is one final treachery, which... is really very unpleasant. Do you want to?
Yep. So this is a wisp of pale sheen. So it seems to be a crying hobbit or an upset, very child, toddler-looking hobbit.
Yeah, I always think
fake
that.
Fake crying.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's obviously meant to be a hobbit.
It's almost like he's a bit upset that he hasn't got his own way about something.
Yeah,
having a bit of a grump. And this is also an escape. And when revealed effect is place two resource tokens on Golem. Any player may exhaust a lore hero to reduce this effect to one resource token. So I didn't have any lore, I didn't have heroes with me. So this is the only one that I... The other ones, I did what we said. I just failed the test, didn't bother taking it. Fine, get one resource on Golem. This one, I would try and cancel.
Yeah.
Tried to save my test of wills because I had spirit and leadership in my deck for these ones. To be honest, I'm not sure how many of these cards there are in the set, but I think I only got it like twice or something in four games.
This one cropped up for me all the time.
Oh, did
it? But luckily I had Bilbo in my deck. And actually I had Bilbo with a fast hitch on him. So even if he was exhausted already for questing, I could ready him with a fast hitch and then just exhaust him again to reduce the number of tokens going onto Golem to one. So that was something at least.
Right, yeah. That is a nasty one, though. That is the nasty treachery in this set, I'd say.
Oh, absolutely. But actually, that's a pretty good transition then, because that's all the encounters. Though. So actually, as I mentioned, I had Bilbo in my deck. So I think it's probably worth us talking about what we put in our decks to get through. I mean, just looking at those encounters, though, I mean, there are other nasty encounter cards from the other sets that we have to put in. I mean, there are Hill Trolls.
Yeah, I picked out three in particular.
Go ahead.
And so there are no birdses. There are wormses. And... snakes is okay, so I think that's one which you're going to mention. But the hill troll,
yeah,
what's a troll doing there? There are no trolls, is right? There aren't even birds, there's nothing, not enough to eat for birds, apparently. So, what's a bird could eat a worm, right? So, you would imagine there would be birds. What's a troll gonna eat in the marsh?
I do not want to see the bird that could eat that giant marsh worm,
yeah, okay. But yeah, our old friend, the hill troll. Yeah, nasty. Saw a few of those in my counters. I'll let you mention the other one, but the last one I wanted to mention was my old friend, the Goblin Sniper.
Oh, bless him.
I had to Gandalf this guy. It's the only way I could get him. For those who don't remember, he has a engagement cost of 48. You can't engage this guy. And also... you can't optionally engage Goblin Sniper if there are other enemies in the staging area. So,
yeah, there aren't that many enemies in this set, but yeah, if you're unlucky.
If you have something like, well, the other enemy you wanted to discuss sitting in the staging area, then, you know, it's a bit of a potential stitch up.
Well, I guess the other enemy you're going to be referring to, because I've not prepared any other cards from the other sets, but I'm presuming you're talking about my favourite, the Wargs.
Oh, I forgot the Wargs. Of course you're going to say that. No, I was talking about the Marsh Adder, who attacks for four.
Oh, the Marsh Adder.
And you have to raise your threat by one every time he attacks you. And he's got 7 hit points. But no, yes, of course you were going to mention the Wargs.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there's a Marsh Adder. Sure, that's unpleasant. But those Wargs.
Yeah. You hate these guys.
Oh, boy, oh boy, oh boy. But actually, it's interesting you mentioned the Marsh Adder because I mentioned that the first time I replayed this, the first card I had to reveal from the encounter deck was that Treachery, which I foolishly at the time performed the escape test on. The next two times, the first card out, Marsh Adder. The time after that, Hill Troll.
Lovely.
I know that we like to tempt fate when we play these games. You know, things like the sneak attack Gandalf being taken from our hand when we have to discard two cards, things like that. So I did it again. I was playing through one of my playthroughs. And obviously there's a lot of locations and treacheries in this deck. And there are relatively few creatures. And I said to myself, do you know what? I haven't seen a single enemy so far.
Oh, even if you say that in your mind, you're done for.
Well, the very next card was a Wolf Rider, which contains Surge. Surge into a Hill Troll.
Lovely. I didn't get a Wolf Rider once.
Yeah, he's actually the Wolf Rider is only really annoying as a shadow, but... I mean, unless, of course, it surges into a Hill Troll. That's
yeah, it does have Surge. Anything with Surge, I generally don't like.
Yeah.
But I would say, generally, enemy-wise, okay, sounds bad, Marsh Adder and Hill Troll, but I didn't find at any point I got really in danger of being overwhelmed by enemies. I always had a way to get around them.
Yeah, well, actually, I because I was playing a lore deck, I had... 3 forest snares with me. I mean, there was no forest, it was marshland, but the snares still worked. So I managed to...
The snares are from the forest. You don't have to put them in the forest.
Yeah, that's what I explained to the Mirkwood runner. He was like, what am I doing here?
Just running a long way. Yeah. The forest gump of the elven world.
Mirkwood forest gump.
It's not going to work, is it? They just kept on running, that's what I meant. You see, don't worry about it.
But I did manage to get the Hill Troll in a snare. And then you'll be pleased to hear, because I was testing out cards from the last episode, I had Infighting in my hand. So I was just piling on damage onto my snared Hill Troll and then moving, killing Wargs with it. Oh, that felt nice.
Oh, I bet you loved that, yeah. Oh, there's a good bet. There you go. We found yet another use for infighting. If somebody's in a trap, they've got plenty of hit points. Yeah, that's a perfect way to do it.
That's what I was doing. I snared the Hill Troll, piled a load of damage on him, and then I was just using infighting to kill Wargs and the Goblin Sniper.
There you go. Perfect. I like it. So go on then. So let's talk about the rest of your deck. So you had Bilbo, I think you said earlier. Do you have 3 lore heroes?
No. Just Bilbo is my only lore character.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah. See, I'm going to say what my deck is. You're going to go, how on earth did you beat this? But I did beat it. I beat it 5 out of 6 times, and I will talk to you about the 6th time at the end of the podcast. So my heroes, I had Bilbo from lore, Aragorn, and Imrahil.
Okay, can I just say from now that my deck was Eowyn, Aragorn, and Imrahil.
Ah, okay. So
I don't think we're too far away.
We're not too far off at all. No. But basically, I mean, you probably maybe for the same reasons, I had Aragorn and Imrahil because their willpower is very high in general. But actually, I didn't really realize this at the time, but this is why this deck worked. But their willpower is pretty high. And the ability to ready Aragorn with his action meant that you could quest with him and then he would be ready again for the escape test. So
exactly, yeah.
So, but like I said, this was just by chance that these are the guys I put in my deck, and it just turned out that it was actually a pretty good combination. But basically, my tactics were with Aragorn became my linchpin. Really, I put the Calabrian Stone on him, which gives him the spirit icon and
so useful in this quest.
Oh yeah,
+2 willpower,
+2
and you're ready. He's taking quest for 4, and then he can escape test for 4.
Exactly.
If he doesn't need to fight.
Yeah, yeah. So exactly that. So that was absolutely perfect. And then because I often like to do, if I'm not playing a spirit deck, but I have got Aragorn there, I would put some Test of Wills in there as well. So as soon as he's got that stone on him, he can cancel some treacheries. And then what I was doing was, when possible, getting Steward of Gondor onto him. And then also the Song of Wisdom.
It's all sounding very familiar so far. My one was the Song of Travel, but I didn't always need it because I was Celebrian State.
I was convinced that you were going to go like full Rohan with this. It's in a way.
I almost did. I nearly did it.
In a way, this is very nice. So Aragorn was my linchpin. And basically, because I wanted to test out a lot of these lore cards, as I've said ad nauseum, I had the Rivendell Minstrel. I had 3 of her in it, which allowed me to find my 1 copy of the Song of Wisdom, as we discussed last episode, as a tactic. But she also quests for 2, so she is not shabby at all when it comes to for this quest. And who else did I have of note? Oh, Faramir. So I was bringing out Faramir when I could, and basically, I think our tactics are actually going to be very similar. I was sure we were going to have a nice in-depth discussion about how there were various different ways that we could complete this quest.
Can I tell you something? I had Faramir. I played 5 games and I didn't see him once. He's gone back to down the pub, Faramir, even in lockdown. A cheeky beggar. But yeah, he would have been fantastic in this quest.
Well, yeah, he really is, because, I mean, essentially, I would try and get Faramir out before the end of the game. So you quest as quickly as possible to get past that first card, as previously discussed. And the whole point was trying to get people ready so that they can quest and then be ready again for the escape test.
Yeah.
Then for that very final escape test for Gollum, if you have Faramir out, chances are you've got a bunch of allies out as well. You just do that final escape test with everybody. And then during that action window that you gain during the escape test, you exhaust Faramir, give +1 willpower to everyone. I think I made a quick note of my final escape test numbers. The very first one was a 7-card escape test. I had willpower of 17, but actually the escape value there was 12. So that was actually the closest one.
Oh, for 7, he had 7 resource on him.
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh. That could have gone wrong. If you got there's a couple with 5, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely.
If you got some of them, yeah, stitch up.
And actually, interesting on that one, on that final questing stage, I revealed a Whisper Pale Sheen.
Lovely.
Actually, I had 6 resource on Gollum at that point. I revealed a Whisper Pale Sheen. Luckily, I could ready Bilbo with the fast hitch to exhaust him again.
Reduce it to 1.
To reduce it to 1, to put the 7 on it. But again, right. So the fast hitch was allowing me to use Bilbo more than once, use him to quest or use him to defend and still use him for the escape tests. At one point, I managed to get 3 fast hitches on him. So he was just popping up and down. Like you wouldn't believe. But let's see. I think, yeah, the second run, I had escape test value of 24 versus 8. The 5th attempt, escape test value of 19 versus 0. Now, I only had 1 resource on Gollum. Now, this is when I refined my deck. Because my deck, I just chucked together, and it turned out it worked really well. And then I thought, actually, I can probably refine this into a machine because there are a few cards in there that weren't really useful. They weren't really doing anything. So I took those out and I put in Henemarth Riversong. So all I was doing was questing, Regging everybody, exhausting Hennemath Riversong before the escape test, looking at what the escape value was, guaranteeing I would exhaust enough people to get past that escape test, rinse and repeat, game over in like five rounds.
He's so useful for those kind of scenarios, Hennemath Riversong.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, fantastic.
It was crazy. And like I say, I only ended up with one resource token. Now, I do want to talk about the one time I failed the quest. But I think first, let's just jump to you and see if there's what, because you went down it sounds to me like a very similar route, but with spirit alongside your leadership.
Yeah, my deck was completely spirit and leadership cards, apart from Song of Travel, which was only needed if I didn't get Celebrian Stone, really, and Gandalf. But yeah, it's a similar kind of thing. So Aragorn, just like you, I was readying after, so I could use them for questing and the escape test or fighting if required. And you'd know what you'd need to fight after the quest phase as well.
Yeah.
Prince Imrahil, just because he's a great all-rounder, he readies if somebody leaves play. So he was great if you had sneak attacks, which were really useful in this quest as well. Yeah. Or if you had to defend with somebody who's going to get killed by a troll or something like this, then you could ready Imrahil, maybe with Aragorn, quite powerful, get rid of an enemy. Eowyn, I was basically not questing with, and I was using for the escape test. I did have a couple of unexpected courage. And funnily enough, I did think it through, and I thought it's probably better just to use them on Aragorn and Imrahil rather than Eowyn. Just in case any kind of fighting cropped up.
Or so I was really just in case John crops up with the most convoluted rules ever created.
Yeah, right, exactly. So that was my basic tactic. And yeah, I played 5 games. I won 4. I lost 1 as well. And I lost, well, okay, we'll talk about that in a second, basically because I miscounted and I ended up threatening out at the end. What I found was, we want to talk about what we thought for difficulty of this after we talk about the ones we lost, or?
Yeah, it's fine. We can talk about it now if you want.
I mean, I must say, when I played this the first time, I put together a deck which I'd made note of, and I passed it first time fairly easily, I think, from memory. I didn't remember that much about the quest. Then I used a different deck this time, and this one, it really wasn't that much of a challenge, to be honest. The last game I played, I actually lost it, but basically because I'd miscounted. And I could have, if I'd just committed everyone to the final escape test on 2B, I would have won. But I messed it up and I ended up fretting out because I forgot that I was engaged with a Marsh Adder. And when they attack you, you raise your fret by 1, which took me to 49. Ooh. And then the next round, I was out. But the other times, I pretty much sailed through. And one game, I won in 8 minutes, which is, and that's completely unprecedented for me. I got a complete fluke with, I got the perfect draw, basically. Right off the bat, I got Steward of Gondor, I got a Gandalf in there, I got a couple of sneak attacks, and I think I had an unexpected courage, and then drew another one, and I got easy draw off the counter deck as well. So I got a treachery, which did nothing, basically, off the bat, right on 1A. And I think I had no resource tokens at all on Gollum when I got to the final deck. It was ridiculous. So I had 4 rounds. So you see, I'm not sure whether it's just because I happened to put this deck together similar to your one by the sounds of it, and we just kind of have stumbled across this really good way of defeating it. But I didn't find this quest that challenging at all, really. And I thought, I played it like 5 times in the space of a couple of hours last night. And got late by the last one and I could have won that one easily, but I messed it up because I was tired. But I like the theme of the quest, to be honest, and the way it fits into the overall story, I guess. But as an individual quest, it's probably not one of my favourites so far. I find it a little bit short and a bit easy, I think.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think, I'm glad that we finally get to see Gollum. after teasing him in the very first AP. But I do have to agree. I do think it is a bit easy. And maybe you're right. Maybe we just lucked out with the decks we put together. But I also, like I say, I imagined that you were going to go full on spirit questing. And that was how I perceived you to have defeated the quest. And I thought, yeah, I can easily see how a full on questing deck could beat this scenario as well. It just happens that we both made a deck which actually defeats it in a bit more of a, well, dare I say, a bit more of an imaginative way than just having raw willpower. But yeah, I also agree. I don't think it's particularly difficult, except if you let Gollum escape.
Yeah, so that never happened. And I'm sure if Gollum escapes, I'm sure the whole game changes.
Okay. Strap yourself in. So this is the one I lost. I don't, you know me, I don't like to sort of stop a game if I don't think I'm going to win. I like to play it through to its conclusion and see if I can claw back a victory. There was one time I let Gollum escape. So basically, there's one time I lost him into the encounter deck. Now, the encounter deck in this quest is large. It is big. And if you lose Gollum early, like I did, he could be anywhere. So I just thought, well, okay, I'll just play through it. Like I did, like same as you, I'd had some very short games, so I thought, I don't mind this being a bit of a longer one. So I was just playing through very carefully, very methodically. I still had Henemarth out there.
Yeah, I was going to say, he'd be your best friend in this one. Right?
Yeah, so I was just seeing what was coming up, and I was, I mean, I had Steward of Gondor on Aragorn, so I was plenty of resources. So I was being able to play everyone. I was drawing two cards to go with Bilbo, and actually, eventually, I drew through my entire deck. I had almost my entire deck in my hand. So I was not short of cards to play. But I just needed to find Gollum. And eventually, a hill troll engaged me and I got it caught in a snare. And I got greedy. I snared it and I filled it up with resources and I was using that to kill any other creatures that came out because I had my three in fighting. So, you know, if necessary. But of course, the thing to remember, even if you have an enemy trapped in a snare, it will still get dealt a shadow card.
Where was your Henema?
Well, he was checking.
Oh, you only had one. You only had one of him out. Yeah, yeah, he's unique, isn't he?
He's unique. But he was checking.
For questing
to make sure, because also I had to not overquest on stage 2B. I didn't want to have to reset. I mean, it wouldn't have actually really mattered. This is the time I traveled to the Impassable Bog because I figured it doesn't really bother me how long it takes me to find this guy. I'm just going to keep going through. What I wanted to do is make sure as soon as I found him, I could just get through it. So yeah, you can guess the end of this. So the shadow card that I had to discard off of the hill troll, it was Gollum, but I played for a good hour and 10 minutes.
No shadow of the past?
No, but actually when I first put the deck together, I had three shadow of the past, and those were the three of the cards I took out to refine my deck. But actually I think I might keep one in there now. I might change the deck again and just leave one in there just for this exact scenario.
So what you're saying is your deck was too small and you should have left you had a larger deck to make it a little bit more flexible. I think that's what I'm hearing. I think, what episode are we on? 14. Episode 14. I think for 13 episodes, every week I've had to hear about how my deck sizes are too big. Oh God. And lo and behold, John, lo and behold, chicken has come home to roost.
you're mistakenly thinking that I would create a 51 card deck. I will find a card to replace to put one copy of Shadow of the Past in there.
You could have just had them all in. You got through your entire deck. You would have won. You would have won the game.
It's true. It's true. I'll tell you, just going to jump back. I've got one card also, because we mentioned him last week, and it's a card you had not really played before. And it was also a very useful way for completing the final escape test, is I had the Longbeard Mapmaker in there, who's the dwarf that you can basically boost his willpower by spending lore resources. So right. I had Song of Wisdom on Gandalf plus Steward of Gondor. So by the time you get to that final escape test, he is minted.
Yeah, on Aragorn.
On Aragorn. On Aragorn. Yeah. What did I say?
Gandalf. Wizards on the brain. Yeah, that I can. Oh God, yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
yeah. Because once you've got that steward on Aragorn and that song, you're cooking on that one.
So then for that final escape test, I just exhausted everybody, including the map maker, and then just spent whatever resources I had left.
Yeah,
I think that was one of the times when I did an escape test value of 24 or something ridiculous.
Oh, just before we finish off, guess how many cards I had in my deck?
Oh no. 60?
Lower.
54.
Lower.
51.
Don't be ridiculous. I had 53 cards in my deck. That's quite good for me.
That is very good, yeah.
So I went back and looked at... I used a deck which won... Well, a slight refinement of this one actually won a number of quests in a row. But then kind of ran out of steam when other challenges came up, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is quite a powerful combo. I quite like your one. I think that's another way to play it, I think. So it's it could be one I might try.
I love Bilbo's ability just to cycle through the deck just to get those cards as quickly as possible. I also had Gildor in there again, so I could just look at the next three and swap out one which I needed. It's just such a good combo. The only thing, it's a little bit slow getting started because you only have one lore hero. So in your starting hand, you kind of need to either already have that song, but because I only had one copy of it, what was more likely is that you'd already have the minstrel, and then you're looking at three rounds before you get the minstrel out, but then it just explodes.
Right.
So you have your three rounds, you save up for the minstrel, put the minstrel out, get the song, put it onto Aragorn. Hopefully he's already got Steward of Gondor, and then you're just flying.
Yeah. I think we had a few key cards on my deck to get through this quest specifically, which is either getting Steward of Gondor early or getting Celebrimbor Stone early.
Celebrimbor Stone is just absolute perfection for this quest.
Or getting Unexpected Courage early, and even to some extent the Song of Travel. So you're likely to get at least one of those early.
Yeah.
If you can mulligan your deck as well. You know, you'd be unlucky not to, I think. So I think that's what made this quest kind of not that challenging, because there are so many ways to get the deck kind of rocking and rolling.
Absolutely.
And like that time I had a number of those things right off the bat. Sneak Attack being the other one as well. If I had most of those things off the bat, that was the time I've defeated it really quickly.
Mm.
But yeah, overall, I did enjoy this quest. But like I said, you know, it wasn't. I don't think it's one I'm going to come back and really play too much, unless I'm playing through the cycle again, which I'm sure I'll do at one point.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think on its own, it's not one that's going to demand lots of replaying, I think.
No, I completely agree. The only thing I really enjoyed about going back to this quest is that it's building this deck, actually, and that this deck works so well. So I'm very intrigued to see if it's just by chance it really worked well with this particular quest, but I'm going to take it out to another quest and see how it fares, because it really did fly, like you say, when you get that right combination.
I think it probably will. I think you'll find that it sounds like that's quite good. I think there's a few quests that you can definitely apply to, and that's what I found with this deck on some other quests we've done, but you know, we'll obviously come to them later as well.
Yeah, so in summary, I completely agree. It's not challenging at all, actually. I think for that reason, I don't think I'll come back to it. The only challenge arises is if Gollum escapes. And actually, I think it becomes nigh on, well, not impossible, but it certainly becomes boring because you really just have to keep looking for him. And the fact that if he ends up in your discard pile, which can happen, you know, because also, bear in mind, if you get a treachery which says you have to do escape tests, if you are not ignoring escape tests because you feel like you shouldn't because of your threat increase, then you still have to perform them, which doesn't make logical sense, by the way, in the story. Or does it? I guess he's still evading you.
Yeah. I mean, what do you mean? Sorry. I mean, well, you can do them and not commit anybody.
No. But I mean, if Gollum has gone into your encounter deck, if you draw a treachery which forces you to do an escape test, you still have to perform it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, does it? Is that right?
Yeah, there's nothing stopping you. It says do an escape test. And if you fail it, you have to put a token on Gollum, which you can't do because Gollum's not there, and increase your threat.
That's a bit silly, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And, and it's little things like that. And going right back to the beginning when we talked about like how the escape test is formed in the phases, those little things about this quest and things like not doing the escape test is actually often better than doing them. It just makes this quest seem a little bit weaker than the rest.
Yeah, it felt to me like it was almost really good.
Yeah.
But not quite. And I can imagine if you took, maybe if you take a certain deck with you, that would make it more of a challenge, maybe make it more of a fun thing. Or maybe you could do something like shove Gollum straight into the encounter deck from the off, just shuffle him in there and just see what happens. Or I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff on top of that.
Absolutely do not recommend that. No, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. Well, we're normally full of praise by the end of
I still enjoyed it. I did enjoy playing it. It's just not one that I'd probably go back and think, oh, I must play The Hunt for Gollum again. You know, it's just...
Dead Marshes.
Sorry. Dead Marshes, yeah. A Dead Marshes. I beg your pardon. Yeah. I still enjoyed it. I wasn't sitting there thinking, oh, this is a waste of time.
I'm very glad to hear that.
It was still, and obviously it fits into the overarching story of what's going on.
Yeah, which is great. Coming to an end. So next time we'll be back to our player card discussions, and then we're on to the final quest of the cycle. I can't believe we've got through it.
just two short episodes to go.
Okay, well, unless you have anything more you want to say about this quest, I think we can pretty much wrap this up.
No, I think we covered all we needed to.
Great. Okay, well, all it leaves me to say then is there are a few ways to get in contact with us if you so wish. We have a Twitter feed, which is @LateOfTheRings. You can get in touch with us directly via email on lateoftherings@gmail.com. And there's one other, the Board Game Geek thread, which, as ever, there will be a link to in the show notes. With that, all it leaves me to say is thanks again for listening, and take care out there. And until next time, goodbye.
Goodbye.